and turns our back on the world, and that is what we've got to focus on over the next 5 years.
Jeremy, what's your vision for a Labour-governed Britain?
We live in an era of gross inequality, and that inequality is deepening throughout Britain. The richest are getting richest, the poorest are struggling, and the inequality is getting worse, and that drives people into desperation and doesn't necessarily drive them towards us. It just drives them into a degree of desperation. As a country, internationally, I think we perform a very poor role. I was against the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war, and I think we've got to reevaluate our whole role in the world and the amount of money we spend on defence, and I'm absolutely opposed to the replacement of a Trident nuclear missile system. On housing, all of us have housing problems to deal with as MPs and constituents, and when I come across people living in the private rented sector being driven out of central London because of the high rents, the same thing is going to happen all over the country with a benefit cap, with lack of rent control and lack of supply of housing. The Tory answer is to sell it all off. We've got to stop that. It's also, finally, because I know you wanted only 60 words and this is about 120, is the question of rights and justice within our society. We passed the Human Rights Act, which was a huge step forward by the last Labour government. I fully supported that. If we withdraw from the European Convention, which may happen, or introduce a British Bill of Rights to undermine it, that is damaging to all, and we've got to stand up against the gutter press that say the Human Rights Act is dangerous. It's not. It gives us all rights, and it gives us all opportunities. That's why we've got to defend it.
Yvette, what does your vision of a Labour-governed Britain look like?
We have to fight against the fact we are becoming a more unequal and a more divided country, but I think also a more gloomy and backward-looking country under the Tories. And that's why I think we've got to be proud of Labour values, proud of fighting for equality, fighting for social justice, but also for the jobs of the future, and make sure that we have got campaigns to get the high-tech jobs for the future for everybody, so everybody gets a chance of them, so that families can get more support, so that we defend our human rights and the values that we are proud of, but also so we can become more optimistic. Because in the end, as a progressive party, as a party of the centre and the left, we have got to be optimistic for our future, otherwise we are nothing.
Andy.
Thanks, Andrew. Everything we do has got to be focused on winning in 2020, and if we're going to do that, we've got to start with where people are. And there are millions of people now in this country who have lost the hope of a secure job. Young people who've lost the hope of a university education. There are people who don't any longer have the dream of home ownership. They can't imagine that they're going to be able to own their own home into their 30s, even their 40s. That's where people are. And that's what I mean by saying that a Labour Britain should help everyone to get on. That's when we're best as a party. When we don't confine aspiration to one group of voters, when we speak to everybody and say the Labour Party will help you get on. It will help you have a better life. And that's what we should all be about.
Thanks to all our candidates. And now we're going to move to a question from John McKee.
Thank you. As in, my name is John McKee. I come from Battersea CLP, but also from Scottish Labour. So this is a very important question for me. How does Labour, as the only national party, combat dual and mutually dependent nationalisms in Scotland and in England?
Thank you very much. So how does Labour combat dual nationalisms in Scotland and England? And this time I'm going to ask Yvette to start answering for about a minute.
Well, the SNP tried to divide us from Scotland. The Tories played on English nationalism and tried to divide us with the fear of Scotland. And we know that UKIP draw on nationalism as well. In the end, I think we have to appeal to our common values about the fact that we believe we are stronger if we stand together than if we leave people to sink or swim alone. We care just as much about children growing up in poverty as children in Leeds as we do in Lanarkshire. And I don't think that we should fall into the SNP's trap of thinking that now what we need to do is break up the Labour Party and have a separate Scottish Labour Party, having been in Scotland yesterday and having talked to a lot of MSPs, of councillors, party members and activists. That is not what they're calling for, because they think that would play into the SNP's hands. They want, yeah, a strong Scottish Labour voice, but they also want us to cherish those values of solidarity. With the party of Keir Hardie, we have to stand against that kind of divisive nationalism wherever we find it. England, Scotland, Wales, the whole of the United Kingdom.
Thank you. Mary.
Nationalism, whether of the Scottish or the UKIP type, is never the answer. But the truth is that in Scotland, we are now a hollowed out party. We've suffered a terrible defeat in Scotland, and we are going to have to build back our movement better in Scotland. We have to earn back the trust that the Scottish people lost in the Labour Party, and that is a big job. And it starts with the Holyrood elections in 2016. But we also need to tell the story of how our movement came together with people across the United Kingdom to make people's working lives better. We need to tell the story of how we had Scottish prime ministers, Scottish chancellors, and how, as a country, we're better when we're working together and working in the interests of working people. Because what the Tories did and what UKIP did was to divide people. And when working people are divided, the Tories end up ruling. It's the same as it's always been. Divide and rule with the Tories, united, stronger for prosperity under Labour. That is the simple solution to Scotland. And structural answers about how the Scottish Labour Party organises, whether it's separate, are secondary to what we're going to do to make the lives of people in Scotland better.
Thanks. Liz.
I don't think that there are any simple solutions to the huge challenge we face in Scotland, and it would be glib for anyone to claim that they knew all the answers. But we did actually win the Scottish referendum by arguing that we are stronger when we pool our resources and share our risks. And if we argue that as a country, we need to argue that for our party too. And I'm concerned about calls from some places for a separate Scottish, an independent Scottish party. I think that would be the wrong approach. We need a strong and clear voice and distinctive voice for Scottish Labour, Welsh Labour, and I'd argue English Labour too. But as I said in my first answer, you know, we are Labour. We believe it is through the strength of our common endeavour that we achieve more. And what people in Scotland want is the same as in Battersea, is a, you know, they want a good job that pays a decent wage. They want a nice place to live. They want local public services they can rely on. And above all, they want hope for a better future that everyone can feel part of. That's part of the solution, but we've got to start from the ground up.
And over to Jeremy.
Thanks for the question. Of course, the sad reality is that whilst the independence referendum did vote no to independence, half the Labour voters voted for independence, and it seems that most of them then retained that position and voted for the SNP, and hence the SNP now have this overwhelming position in Scotland. When we started down the road to devolution in the 1974 to 79 Parliament, we moved in the direction of a federal Britain. We've got to face up to it. There's different funding arrangements, different places. And I would want to hear a proper debate within the Scottish Labour Party and trade union movement on whether or not they believe there should be a federal Labour Party, so the Scottish Labour Party operating independently of the rest, and also whether or not we shouldn't go down the road of higher levels of devolution in England, so that there's much stronger regional government and regional structures in England. And indeed, Ed Miliband sort of proposed some of this in his proposals for the abolition of the House of Lords and how those things would go around. We have to defeat racist nationalism, but there is also a radical tradition in Scotland and England, which is also one of identity, and we shouldn't be afraid of embracing that radical tradition as well.
Great, and Andy Burnham.
I think to answer the question, you have to set out what is Labour's answer to identity politics. And I would say to be Labour is to be comfortable with multiple identities, to be English, British and European all at the same time, and not to set one against another, or to be Scottish, British and European. And that's the point, isn't it? That these things don't have to be in competition. They can be there together. I agree with Yvette. I don't want to see a separate Scottish party. It does need to be within the context of a UK party. And more broadly, I think the time has come for Labour to to get more on the front foot in tackling nationalism. Jeremy's right about this. I think nationalism is never healthy. Politics based on borders, on lines on the ground, how does that help everybody get on when you're setting one group of people against another? You know, it is to be confronted in my view. And we've got in a context now in British politics where the Tories are playing openly and nakedly to English nationalism. So are UKIP. We've got the SNP implied. We're the only party that can hold Britain together, that can speak to all parts of the UK. And that should be something that sets Labour apart and something we approach with pride.
Thank you very much. Let me... Our questioner, John McKee, what do you think?
Thank you. I agree with Yvette and most of the panel and what they say. I just wonder if Andy, if you could just clarify, because I had heard it reported that you did want an independent Scottish party. And the reason that concerns me, given I won't be too long, just that the leadership is already separate there, is that the bus driver in Bradford has more in common with the bus driver in Bathgate than they do with the owner of the bus company. So it's very important that they have that national representation. Mm. It's incredibly important. So please tell me that you don't support an independent Scottish Labour Party.
Thank you, John. Andy?
Well, I think I was making that very point just a moment ago, that people of Liverpool, Manchester, Glasgow have much more in common with each other. And I was put that it was put to me, you know, did I support that? And I said it was a proposal that had come from some in the Labour Party in Scotland. I didn't want to dismiss it. But no, I never said that I would support it. And instinctively, I am British first, British before I'm English, actually. So I would always support the idea of a United Kingdom Labour Party.
Most of you just spoke more about Scotland than about English nationalism and the rise of UKIP. Liz, how do we defeat UKIP, who are second in so many Labour-held seats?
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's gone out campaigning heard about concerns about immigration, and we have to listen and treat those concerns with respect. We need clear rules that everyone abides by, so people who come here should come to work, not claim benefits. We need to deal with the consequences of immigration, I think particularly around schools and housing. But Labour must always offer a chance and not a grievance. And we will never address this issue by trying to out UKIP. UKIP immigration has brought real benefits to this country that I think we've been far too nervous in arguing for. And ultimately, we've got to address the root cause of the problem here. Much of UKIP's support is in low-skill, low-wage areas. We have got to have an economy that delivers good quality jobs in every part of the country and transform skills so people have got the chance of making sense of all the changes around them. That's the approach I think we need to take to fighting back UKIP. And I just wanted to come back to a really important point that Jeremy said about devolving power and control within England. You know, we are one of the most centralised countries in Europe. You simply cannot make the right decisions on many issues from Westminster or Whitehall. We've got to push that power out of Whitehall, down to local councils, but also into communities too. That won't just lead to better decisions. I think it's also fundamental to rebuilding trust with the public. That is a big agenda, power in the hands of many, not the few. And that's something I don't think we did enough on. There was lots on devolution in our manifesto, but we've got to push it forward. We should never have allowed George Osborne to somehow steal, you know, our arguments with the Northern powerhouse. We need that power in all parts of the country. We've got to face up to that, and that's got to be a big part of our mission to win in 2020.
Jeremy, a lot of the comments in the discussion earlier today has been people see Labour as the party of London in constituencies like yours, but outside London in the other places in England, they say Labour's not for us. How can we be for us in the rest of England?
Well, there was a time in London when there was a serious growth of racism in London in the 70s and early 80s. I was very much part of the anti-racist movement during that period. The BNP, National Front, the National Front got 100,000 votes in the GLC election in 1977, I think it was, something about that. And that was eventually defeated. And London is now politically a very, very different place. And certainly the results we had in London were generally good, although we didn't gain a number of constituencies we expected to. London has a degree of devolution but not total. We've got the London mayoral election next year, which is going to be utterly crucial for the party. I want us to push for devolved powers in housing for London so that we can do something to solve the housing crisis and use that as an example for the rest of the country that it is possible to regulate the private rented sector. It is possible to control rents in order to maintain diversity of communities. Now, how does that translate to the rest of the country? Well, I can't change what I am as a London MP representing a London constituency, and that's a fact. But we do have to appeal to everyone. And I spent some time in the election campaigning in Thanet South. You'll all have heard of the place. What I found there was that the Labour Party, until a couple of years ago, had probably not been terribly active. I think Will Scobie himself would say that. Well, in fact, he did say that. But a lot of the people I was talking to were proposing to vote UKIP, hadn't a clue what UKIP was about. They were voting partly on petty racism, but partly because they just felt totally naffed off with all of us. And this crap had been fed to them year on year by the Sun and the Mail, and they therefore went for a horrible alternative. We've got to inspire people that it is possible to provide jobs, housing, schools and education.
And Yvette, the story in Yorkshire was not good, was it?
Yeah, we had areas in Yorkshire where you saw the UKIP vote go up very considerably. But I think the other pattern is that this was about smaller towns and coastal towns as well. The truth is Labour did well in the big cities. In the cities where we've got strong growth and where diverse communities and people feeling more confident about the future were also the areas where Labour won far more votes and where we won more constituencies. But it was the smaller towns, the smaller cities in Britain where actually we went backwards. And where I think both the Tories and UKIP were able to play on the politics of fear and blame. So you saw the Tories play on the politics of fear around Scotland, fear of the SNP, but UKIP playing on fear of immigration or fear of Europe. And we have got to be able to reach out to towns and communities that feel left behind, not just groups of working people that feel left behind as well. And that's why I feel very strongly about my constituency is small towns in the north, is where my family all grew up in small towns. I went to a comprehensive school in a small town in the south. And I think it's that recognising that areas that feel left behind, communities that feel left behind, as well as the widening inequality, is fertile ground for people to play the politics of exploitation and blame. But we have to take it on, and the challenge in terms of the UKIP to take it on is for too long the party has just assumed that UKIP is taking voters only from the Tories. That is not what was happening.
Okay.
And so we have to challenge them, whether it is on racism when they say things that are racist, whether it is on their policies, and whether it is on letting working people down.
Thanks. I'm so sorry. I'm interrupting the most senior people in the Labour Party, but so we get through all the questions we can. Sally Smith.
Oh, can I answer that?
Can I come on?
I'm coming to Mary next, so you're answering first on the next question. So, okay. Sally Smith, I'm so sorry, guys.
We're not able to answer the bigger question about UKIP and.
Yeah, you haven't asked. You haven't brought us in.
See if you.
Weave it into something else.
So let me explain the format. Each candidate has 1 minute at the start, and after that we're going for 5 minutes of open debate. I will, over the course of the debate, make sure that everyone has equal speaking time. Right. Sally Smith.
Hello, Sally Smith, Buckingham CLP. Education did not feature as a topic in the election. How would you make it a positive feature for Labour in 2020?
And this time we will start with Mary Craig.
Okay, great. Well, as I came in here today, I saw the sign from Einstein. It's great to see so many people in a lecture hall, actually. There was never standing room only when I was giving a lecture at Cranfield School of Management. There's the Einstein saying on the way up the stairs was, the true sign of intelligence is not knowledge, but imagination. And I think we need to shout that out to Michael Gove, because he's gone but not forgotten. And I don't want him micromanaging the syllabus that my kids are going to be reading. I don't want him to tell me that they should be reading Of Mice and Men and not Macbeth. That's none of his business. I don't want him setting the history curriculum. I want my kids to come out and have been taught how to think, not what to think. And in a digital age, that is what we need to be doing.
Liz Kendall.
I mean, I think Sally raised a really important point. A Labour Party that stopped talking about education and opportunity has forgotten what it stands for. It's the ticket for a better life for us all. It's the key to tackling inequalities. And I think that we need to start really early on. I want to see the earliest years, 0 to 5, as equal in status and importance as primary and secondary schools. We need a curriculum, Mary's absolutely right about this, that inspires children and prepares them for the 21st century instead of what's happening under Gove, which is back to the 19th century. We need great heads and great teachers and not an education secretary that slags teachers off just for a cheap headline. Education has got to be back at the heart of what Labour stands for. We didn't do enough of that over the last 5 years. Over the next, we must.
Thank you very much. Jeremy.
Under the Tories, essentially education is on the road to privatisation. It's starting at the early end with the nurseries, and the university funding arrangements encourage privatisation and indeed encouraging private universities. And we fed into that to some extent with the fee regime that we introduced. The Tories have introduced free schools and now academies all over the place to remove the role of the local education authority. It kind of worries me that we're going to end up after 5 years with thousands of schools, no effective local authority supervision or control of them in any way, and a Department of Education incapable of controlling all of those. And so I think we have to be quite blunt about it, that we want to restore the role of local government in education. We want to restore the independence of universities. And also, I think we need to be proud of what we've Labour was set out to do, which was, apart from schools and so on and comprehensives, but also adult education, because it's been utterly destroyed, and it destroys the opportunities of people that maybe didn't do so well at school but want to develop themselves afterwards. There's a lot we can do, and we should do it.
Andy, you were Shadow Education Secretary for a period.
I was, and I said then, Andrew, that what guides my approach to education is simply this. I believe passionately with every fibre of my being in comprehensive education. I think comprehensive education should be as intrinsic to Labour DNA as the NHS and the NHS values. But the problem is we've let it fall into disrepair. We haven't argued for it. We didn't argue for it in government. In fact, we looked like we were backing off it. We were somehow ashamed of it. And consequently, the whole notion of comprehensive education has kind of dropped in the public esteem. So I would want to rethink it for the 21st century. That should be what Labour is all about. You have to have a guiding philosophy, don't you, when it comes to education policy. And for me, that should be all children educated together, seeing life from all sides, all children with hope at the end of school. And in truth, we have an education system that focuses on the academic route, 5 A to C's. That's how schools are judged. So all the effort and energy goes to that. But it doesn't do enough for those kids who want a more vocational education. And that is a scandal, quite honestly. That is wrong. And that is what I said as Shadow Education Secretary. And I feel it very passionately now. Every child should have prospects at 18. And that should be university or an apprenticeship. And the education system should get all children to that level.
Thanks. Yvette.
We need the education system to be forward-looking, to be inclusive, not to be narrow and backward-looking. And that, is, in the end, is what the Tories are delivering for us. That means not just focusing on academic education, but also on vocational education, expanding apprenticeships, but also really high-quality, gold-standard vocational education for the future and adult education throughout life. So, yeah, we should start with the early years, but also remember that we're all of us going to have to relearn and retrain. And who learns what as well? Look at the coding, the high-tech skills for the future, and yet 95% of the coding is being done by men for the most powerful jobs of the future. And the final thought is that if we really care about education, well, we should all be standing up and shouting about the fact that George Osborne has just cut £450 million from the education budget, not from the schools, but that is going to be coming from the early years, the adult education, the FE, the vocational training that we desperately need for the future, and we should not let him get away with it.
Thank you. very briefly, let me turn to Sally Smith.
I just wanted to say that I totally agree with everything that was said.
By everybody, okay.
Which doesn't make my choice of a candidate for leadership any easier, but it does give me great faith in the Labour Party.
I just want to ask, is David Roddy here? If he is, should you just wave? No? Yes? There he is. I'm going to read out his supplementary on this. Considering that all the candidates had the opportunity to go to university for free, why shouldn't I? Mary, do you want to take that?
I want to rewind a little bit because I want to reflect on my experiences as a councillor in Islington when I joined as a Labour councillor. And our schools, we had one school with 8% of children getting 5 A to C's, and the average across the borough was 23%. So clearly the system that was in place 15, 20 years ago when I entered political life was inadequate to deliver for those children on those estates and across the borough. And lots of people, lots of Labour Party members, sent their kids out of borough and sent them private and sent them to selective schools. And we need to really reflect on that. There can be absolutely no defence of failure anywhere in the school system at all.
Liz, do you want to address the point on universities?
Yeah, and I want to be direct with David about this, who raises a point that many people have raised, but under my leadership, our priority will be early years, not cutting university tuition fees, because we've got to get kids to have a chance. I mean, so many children in my constituency start school 15 months where they should be in terms of their development, and in some schools, 20 months behind. They struggle to even get basic GCSEs, let alone the chance of going to college or university. We have just lost an election where people haven't trusted that we would make the difficult decisions, and they haven't trusted us with their money. We have to face up to that and actually live what we say. And I have to be straight with you, early years would be my priority, not cutting those tuition fees.
I disagree with Liz, because I think both have got to be a priority. I know that £9,000 a year tuition fees have stopped lots of young people in Lee from going to university, indeed from having the dream of university, as I was saying a few answers back. And that makes me profoundly worried, because they start switching off at school and they don't fulfil their potential. You have to keep aspiration alive in places like Lee. And that's why we have to have a better system of funding for universities. We need to be more radical. I think Ed did the right thing by proposing a drop in tuition fees, but we should go even further, I think, and look again at other ideas such as a graduate tax. That is crucial, it seems to me, if we're going to keep a society where every young person has legitimate hope of getting to university. And I've just a final point. I think there is difference in education policy. I think the time has come to be clear about the Labour Party. Do we support a broken down education system with academies and free schools? Well, I don't. I believe in a collaborative, comprehensive education system.
Yvette?
David asked why his university education couldn't be free like all of ours was. And it is because there's so many more people going to university right now. But I don't think the current system is working, and I don't think it's fair. I also don't think it's fair on the taxpayer either, because so many people can't pay back that level of fees that actually the taxpayer loses out. So it just doesn't work for anybody. That's why I've actually thought since about 1999 that we should shift to a graduate tax system for university education. I think that would be fairer. It's hard to do it. You have to work hard at how to do it, but I think that would be a fairer system to do it, so that we can have a vision of people being able to start education at a very early stage, thinking about that early years development, the Sure Start programmes that I was one of the ministers that brought in the Sure Start, because we didn't have that support for the under fives before we had a Labour government bring in the Sure Start, but to develop that right through and see this as the kind of education that people should get throughout their lives, not just at the beginning. I think you can get too bogged down in structures, but I don't think that the free school experiment is right. It's an expensive experiment and hasn't delivered value for money or the places that we need in the right parts of the country either.
Thank you. I'm going to move on to the next one. I'll bring Jeremy in early on that one. This time, I'm going to be asking Jason Keane to ask a question.
To win a majority of 10, Labour needs to win a number of constituencies that we've never won before, including Basingstoke. Yeah. It's a seat that's voted Tory for 100 years, and the Labour Party, frankly, doesn't exist there at the moment. So how would you build a Labour Party that can win Basingstoke and other communities like it?
Thank you very much. And it's Liz's turn, I think.
I mean, you're right to set out the horrific scale of the challenge we've faced to win in 2020. I think there's 24 seats with a Tory majority of less than 3,000. But we've got to face up to the reasons why we lost. People didn't trust us with their money. They didn't trust us with the economy. And if they don't do that, we won't even get a hearing. We didn't speak to enough people. I don't mean literally. I mean in terms of the breadth of our message. I am passionate about tackling zero-hours contracts and the minimum wage and the bedroom tax. But if you weren't on a zero-hours contract or the minimum wage and you owned your own home, people felt we had nothing to say to them. And we did not offer a positive enough alternative for the future. We have got to make big changes as a party, and I come back to David's question before. If we spend the next 5 years arguing against, every time, just against Tory cuts and save the NHS, we will not win again in 2020. We have to fundamentally change our approach.
Jeremy, for Labour to govern again is the only way New Labour.
Well, I was never actually part of New Labour.
Oh, yes, we were.
No. I never went down that particular road myself. I had some differences with New Labour, and I still do. Surely the problem in the election was that Ed Miliband made some really good points in his speeches and actions about zero-hours contracts, rights of work, and all that agenda. Really good. But the problem was that when people got home and turned on the television, they found that we were actually also signed up to an agenda for austerity. We were also signed up for an agenda to pay off the debt within one parliament. There would also have been massive cuts to local government expenditure. There would have been underfunding of an awful lot of other services. And frankly, that's not a very inspiring thing to offer. We're not really saying to people, hang on a minute, the bankers created this crisis, not ordinary people. Why are ordinary people paying the price for this crisis? And so if it means running a deficit longer in order to maintain and develop services, if it means investing in the economy and raising wages from which you get more taxes, surely that is a better way to go than offer people another dose of austerity light rather than austerity heavy. I think that is the way we start to inspire people.
Andy Burnham.
Well, Liz is right. If we're to win in 2020, we do need to face up now to the big strategic negative problems that we've got as a party. I was part of the last leadership campaign, as you know, and in truth, we didn't do that. We skirted round the issues. We cannot afford to do that this time. So the leadership campaign I'm running this time is a campaign to win in 2020. So I have been addressing the whole question of spending and economic competence, of immigration, of benefits. We have to face up to those issues, not copy the Tories, but develop Labour answers in each of those areas that people can take to the doorstep with pride and confidence. But we need to do much more than that, much more. The truth is, let's not just say Basingstoke, because then we're doing what we always seem to do, which is compartmentalise the voters, say that the southern voters down here who want one kind of thing, and then there are northern voters here who want another kind of thing, and then there's Scotland. We won't get anywhere if we keep on doing that. All voters have aspirations. All voters want the same things, and all voters actually are looking at us as a Labour Party, and they don't see a party that they can affiliate and relate to anymore. We've lost our emotional connection with millions of people up and down this country because at times they've heard people speaking in a code that they don't understand. We've looked like a think tank rather than a political party that has...
Thank you.
...has no disrespect to think tanks, of course. You're including this one.
You're in the wrong place for that.
Yes.
Yvette.
Well, just to finish the point, if I may, I mean, we must change that. And if we're going to change that, it means speaking to everyone's hopes and dreams everywhere. Those aspirations to have a home, to get on in life. That is the way we win in Scotland and in the South and in Basingstoke.
Yvette Cooper.
I lived about 11 miles from Basingstoke and took my driving test in Basingstoke. So they had an awful lot of roundabouts, is what I remember most from it. So I did, I'm not quite sure what that says about our ability to win in Basingstoke, but I can win a driving test in Basingstoke. You're going off a tangent, aren't I? We were too narrow and we have to reach out. But that doesn't simply mean reaching out in one direction or another. If we just stay narrow and we shift our narrow party a bit to the left or a bit to the right, we're still too narrow. We've got to build outwards. So for the skilled engineer that I've talked to who's worried about losing his job, is due to be made redundant and worried about the fact that the only alternative jobs in the area are distribution jobs on 0 hours contracts, yeah, I could say to him, we should stop the exploitative 0 hours contracts. And he agreed with me, absolutely right, we should. But he also wanted something more. He wanted to know where was the skilled engineering jobs or the skilled high-tech jobs coming to in Yorkshire or in Basingstoke or wherever. And so that's what I think we've got to do. I don't think we should ditch any of those policies about tackling zero-hours contracts. Absolutely right to do, but we've got to also show how we will grow the jobs of the future. And that means being supporting, working with businesses to grow. And we have to reset our relationship with business in order to do that, to show where we will get the jobs for the future as well. Great.
Mary.
Labour has become an analogue party in a digital age. And that's our biggest problem. What are we going to do? We have to rebuild from the bottom up. We've got to be a party of all the talents. That means the talents of every single one of you in this room. We've got to step into the leadership role that is required of us in our towns, in our cities, in our communities, in our streets, in our workplaces, and I'm afraid on Facebook and Twitter as well. And we have to become the Carlsberg party. We've got to refresh the parts other beers don't reach. And I'm afraid the way we're going to have to do that is to rebuild the progressive coalition that gave New Labour 3 election victories. We were all part of that. We were all out on the doorstep winning for Labour. And we have to reform a winning coalition, whether it's with the Brown Hair Preservation Trust, whether it's with the businesses, the small businesses, whether it's with the people who care passionately about third world development and international development. We have to make sure that everybody knows that the Labour Party is on their side. And small businesses, there are 5 million sole traders and self-employed people, they think that we're the enemy of wealth creation. If they continue to think that, we will never win Basingstoke.
Thank you very much. Jeremy, can I turn back to you? I think, you know, there's a lot of people in this room who agree with every word you said on austerity, but we won't win an election in this room. How are we going to reach out to market towns and suburbs by being more left-wing than Ed Miliband?
Well, I think you reach out to people by offering them something collective. You aspire to the collective as much as possible. And so whilst some families might feel they're doing fairly well and fairly well off, their children can't get housing, their children can't get jobs, their children can't afford to pay university fees, and they themselves are actually in the same boat as just about everybody else. How do we achieve that? Surely you build a sense of unity rather than individualism. Didn't the Tories win on the basis that they were offering a fairly individual, rather greedy society that doesn't care about the rest? We surely care about everybody, and that's what I think the message we have to give. Now, on austerity, we didn't create the crisis of 2008. That was essentially an international crisis. I don't think the last Labour government spent too much, except maybe on defence, but nevertheless, I mean, that's my own view, but I don't think it spent too much, and it should be proud of what we did on Sure Start and all those kind of issues. We should be more defensive of that. In the future, yeah, We want to see much higher levels of taxation on corporates that can afford to pay it, much higher levels of taxation on the wealthy that can afford to pay it. That is what redistribution is all about. It's not simple, but you've got to campaign for it very hard.
Mary just said that we need to be the party of business to win in Basingstoke. Andy, how can we be that?
Well, we have to do, I think, what Mary, I think Yvette was saying too, we can't look like we're the enemy of business. You know, the people who employ our constituents, the people who get us to work, we cannot look as a party as though we're instinctively hostile to business. And I think if we're honest, some of them saw it that way at the last election. So we have to have policies that show that we want to support business. And I think we actually did have some good policies, but they got lost in the election campaign. You know, the policy of cutting business rates, I thought was a really good, strong policy, but we didn't get it over enough. But we also have to take the right big decisions, the strategic decisions that will help business develop. And that's why I said at the very beginning of this campaign that we should bring forward the European referendum. It would be a disaster for British business and jobs if we have a long, protracted, divisive debate about Europe, creating the uncertainty, blighting inward investment. The Labour Party has a chance to lead here, and that is what I have shown in this leadership campaign. Bring that referendum forward. Let this party make a strong, passionate, full of conviction, a case for staying in the European Union. Yes, with changes to the things that concern people, but that is where we will win, and that is where we will win back British business, if we go out and make that argument with conviction and with belief.
Liz.
As Labour, the party of work, I think we have lost touch with what the world of work really is like now. There are 15% of people who now run their own small business. They're self-employed. We didn't have anything to say for that growing group. There are all of the people who work in small businesses, not those who just run them, but who work in small businesses and don't have the same kind of protections that are afforded to others. Lots of people who deliver a public service, like home care, but work for the private sector. And we are an industrial organisation in a post-industrial age. We have got to change and understand what the world of work is like and will be like. And there is something far more profound here. And you will know this from talking to people. It's not just that people didn't trust us on the economy or think we weren't pro-business. They think that Labour doesn't believe in the values that they have of hard work, responsibility, taking care of yourself and your family as well as others. And that is such a profound disconnection in parts of the country that we have to address. And that means, whilst we passionately care about the effect of things like the bedroom tax and zero-hours contracts, we have to talk about the issues that people who aren't suffering from that are struggling with, because that is the way we win to change the country and make the real welfare reforms that we need to give people a better chance in life.
Is that very quickly, 2 seconds?
There's a digital revolution going on, and Britain is just not ahead of it, and we should be, because we have all of the advantages with the English language, with the work that we did to build the internet in the first place. So many of the jobs of the future are going to be digital, not just the new startup businesses, but so many in existing businesses and companies as well. And yet we are not providing the training to get those jobs for the future. We're not encouraging, we're not even making sure that there is fast enough broadband in a whole load of small towns, coastal towns all across the country. No wonder a lot of those towns feel left behind, because they can't actually do the digital startups that are happening in the cities and great urban growth in the big cities. So we should, that you need government to work with business to do that. It is a great example of how we and business could work together and make sure that we have the new white heat technology for the future.
Now, my next question is from Maurizio Suarez.
Yes. So I'm Maurizio Suarez. I'm a professor here at the University of London. And my question is about the forthcoming European Union referendum. And I want to ask the panel, should Labour confront scepticism about the European project? And if so, how?
Thank you very much. And this time, Jeremy, it's your turn, isn't it?
Well, I have incredibly mixed feelings about the European Union in lots of ways. One is there are some social good that comes out of the European Union. working time directive and many of the social issues and many of the environmental issues are very good in the European Union. There is linked with the Council of Europe, there's some very, very important things such as the European Convention on Human Rights and European Court of Human Rights. But since, particularly since Maastricht, Europe has become very much a market-orientated Europe. Look at the way the Eurozone is behaving. Look at the disgraceful behavior towards Greece by the European Central Bank. And I think we have to make some demands in all this period of renegotiation about Europe. What are we doing about maintaining the free right of movement of people all across Europe rather than impeding that right of movement across Europe? We have to work very hard to try and get some kind of similarity on employment legislation, on employment rights, on trade union rights, which are very different across Europe. We have to have some degree of social solidarity across Europe, which simply doesn't exist at the moment. And I hope the party will have the courage in the parliamentary party to allow an independent free vote on this so that various members of the PLP can express their own point of view and we don't try to impose some straitjacket on the debate.
Andy Burnham.
I think the European referendum will define British politics for a generation. And I think it could have enormous consequences for the party that we all love, the Labour Party. Because it could be, if you like, the Scotland moment in the Midlands, in the North, in the South, where potentially the Labour Party could be seen to be defending a status quo that the public have doubts about. And then you have UKIP standing outside of that, claiming to speak for ordinary people. And that's why I have been saying all through this campaign, this party needs to wake up now to this issue. I believe we need a Labour yes campaign, not a generic yes campaign, because we need to set out a distinctive Labour case for staying in Europe, but also the reform that we want to see in Europe. And that should be what we do with confidence, because I would be the first
Thank
to defend
you.
The free movement of labour around Europe. My own dad worked around Europe when I was younger because there was no work here. So how hypocritical would it be for me to attack that? And we should be proud of that
Thank
as
you.
An internationalist party. But free to work is not the same as free to claim. And that's the point of fairness, I think, that the British public are looking
Thank
for.
You.
So let's get that reform, but then let's get out there and make the argument. Because, very last point, Andrew, there is a threat here if we're not careful, if we're on the back foot. But if we're on the front foot, making a passionate pro-European case, having secured changes to Europe, we then could be the party that then comes through and wins this referendum for Britain, wins it in the British interest, with a divided Tory party
Thank
alongside
you.
Us, and that will then put us in a good position to go on and win the 2020 general Thank election.
Yvette.
Staying in part of Europe is going to be incredibly important for our future, just at a time when international links and trade become more important than ever. The idea that we would close ourselves off is so backward-looking and would be so damaging to who we are and to the investment that we'll get in the future, to our jobs. So, yeah, of course, we have to have a strong Labour campaign to stay part of Europe. We have to also argue for reform, but we should be arguing for reform before the referendum, during the referendum, and after the referendum. And not seeing reform as being conditional, we should be pro-European, pro-being a yes campaign. And we also need to make sure, though, that those campaigns are very local. Because if this becomes just a national campaign about national levels of jobs or X million jobs or X billion pounds of investment, in the end, people won't identify with it. So I want a campaign in Pontefract which talks about the 600 jobs at Haribo in Pontefract, which are just being created in the new factory that they're building. For Haribo telling me that's because they want to be exporting to Ireland, to France, to Spain, and they wouldn't be
Thank
putting
you.
That investment in if we were outside Europe. So we need lots of Haribos,
Thank
lots
you.
Of Pontefracts, and lots of local campaigning.
Mary.
Well, let's start by asking, what's the European Union ever done for us, eh? The longest, largest, and most successful peace process the world has ever seen, because there's nothing like a war to really stop your housing starts and really diminish economic growth. It's provided workers' rights, it's provided consumers' rights, it's cleaned up our beaches, it's cleaned up our landfills, and it's made us not compete in a race to the bottom in the global race, but a race to the top. The largest internal market in the world of 500 million people,
and I want us to be in it, and I want us to stay in it. My parents are immigrants from Ireland and Northern Ireland, and people keep saying Northern Ireland's not a different country. I can tell you, if you were living in Fermanagh in a farmhouse 2 miles from the nearest village, which was Rosslea, which none of you have heard of, in the 1950s, England was a different country. And I've lived abroad as an emigrant as well, in Belgium and in Italy. So I've seen the good sides and I've seen the bad sides. It's hard being an immigrant in a different country, even if you do speak the language. And I want us to stop demonising immigrants. We want people to come here to set up businesses, to help us grow. It's not about where you come from.
Thank you.
It's about where we're going as a country. And just finally, we have 1,600 businesses in Yorkshire and the Humber exporting. We've got Airbus, we've got Deutsche Bank, we've got the CBI, we've got Vauxhall Motors, all warning us, and Haribo, warning us about what will happen with an exit. I think it's wrong for us to be, we have to talk about reform. Any big institution has to change. But if we make reform our problem rather than David Cameron's problem, we will end up being the red Tories as we were painted in Scotland. We've got to be about basic principles, basic understanding that this is a good thing for us as a country and a thing that we want to stay as part of.
Thank you, Mary. Liz.
Yes, Labour should confront Euroscepticism head on. I was listening to a Tory maker speech in the Queen's Speech debate where he was talking about our national interest and that we could only deliver that if we got all these powers back from Europe, fundamentally misunderstanding that our future is intimately linked with Europe. It's the key not just to jobs and inward investment, but our ability to have strong trade agreements with China, India, Russia, Brazil, and the US. It's how we will tackle one of the biggest, we've not even spoken about this yet, which is strange for the Fabians, on climate change. How are we ever going to tackle that issue if we're out of Europe? And to our national security, how we deal with huge problems that are being created with migration across the globe. Now, yes, we need a distinct Labour argument on this, but it would be a profound mistake to somehow boycott the wider Yes campaign. This is a chance for us to build relationships back with business, with our trade union colleagues, with those from community and voluntary organisations, the green movement. We can be part of a wider movement saying our future is part of Europe. And I think it would be a real mistake for us to think that we could somehow pull out of or boycott that campaign.
Thank you. As a supplementary to this one, I just want to bring in Jane Zekers. I can't say it, sorry, Jane. How do you say your name?
It's Jane Zekerzewski. I'm from Brighton. My question to the panel is, are you prepared to make a positive argument in favour of immigration rather than simply trying to outdo UKIP?
Obviously, immigration will be at the heart of the Europe debate. Jeremy?
Absolutely, yes, I do all the time, and I think it was a terrible shame the way we handled the issue in the election campaign. I was appalled and ashamed at the mug and appalled and ashamed at the pledge on that, and it was to the credit of the JCWI and others that they were the ones that produced a poster campaign on the positive benefits of immigration. That should have been our campaign.
Liz?
Yes, we do have to make. We've been too nervous of making a positive case for immigration, but I also think New Labour was too cavalier, I think, about some of the consequences of globalisation that too many communities have felt left behind, and that's something we have to address, and I shall keep it at that.
Thank you. And Mary, I cut you off on UKIP earlier. How do we talk to UKIP-y voters who are worried about immigration?
Well, we've got to tell them that UKIP and the Tories are revolving doors. One goes to one side, one goes to the other side. Tories and UKIP, they're two horns on the same goat. And what they are about... that's not mixing my metaphors, it's true.
Quite like it.
Yeah. What they are, they're about putting working people against each other. Divide and rule. It's the way the Tories have always done it. Isn't it? So it shouldn't matter whether you're from Poland, from Purley, or from Pakistan. If you've come here to work and you've got your shoulder to the wheel and you're paying in your taxes, there should be room for everybody. And what we shouldn't allow also is for UKIP to use the strains on our education system, our health system, and our housing system, which are down to Tory policy, to put working people against each other. And that is what they are doing. And I think also the issue around the minimum wage, which has not kept pace, with average wages. We had George Osborne saying, you know, Britain needs a pay rise, but I'm not going to give you one. We should be absolutely clear that the minimum wage has been a floor, not a ceiling. And for too many people, they've seen wages undercut in their own areas. So we have to make sure that we have a strong minimum wage, strong enforcement of it, and no zero tolerance for employers who are using and abusing migrant labour to undercut jobs.
Right. Yvette, very briefly. Immigration and Europe.
Immigration has been an incredibly important part of our history. It's made us the country we are, and it's also going to be a really important part of our future. That is why it needs to be controlled and managed so that the system is fair, so that we maintain broad support for staying an outward-looking country. And we all know so many doorsteps that we knocked on where people would raise concern about immigration. And actually, when you talk to people, very often it was all to do with the exploitation of low-skilled migration that was undercutting local wages and jobs, that was ending up being unfair on everyone. On those who had come here to work to try and support their families who were being exploited, maybe not paid the minimum wage or working in terrible conditions. And I met Polish workers working in really awful factory conditions, refrigerator conditions. Unless we tackle that exploitation, the system isn't fair and nobody has any confidence in it. The public meetings I did which talked about that, actually people supported our policies, thought it was better to make the system fair and also supported immigration as a result.
Sorry. Right. Thank you very much. Andy's going to answer the final question first. So let me.
Andrew,
let me
I've not answered that on that one. So.
Okay, go on. It was meant to be a supplementary.
That's
but I'll
the
give
second
Andy,
time I would be.
I'll anyway, give you 20 seconds. That's fine. That was meant to be a supplementary, but I'll give you 20 seconds. That's fine.
Yeah.
30.
10. No.
Just to explain, the format was meant to.
I
be
thought everybody
minutes,
got a chance to answer, Andrew.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Anyway,
yes, Jane, I said that, didn't I? That we'll defend free movement, and we should always do that. But let's look at the reasons why UKIP are lying second across the north of England, the Midlands, because people have concerns about immigration. I knocked on the door and someone in my constituency in Lee, who told me at the election he was voting UKIP because he was the only person on his shift who could speak English. Now, if we're just on the TV saying immigration is great for everybody, we're never going to get his vote back, are we? We're not going to win his vote back. So Yvette is right. Tackling these issues around the undercutting of the minimum wage because people are still employed by agencies overseas, tackling issues around agencies bringing in whole shifts from abroad, not advertising jobs in Britain, that has to stop. Stopping the undercutting of skilled wages too. These are the issues that have to be addressed, and if we do that, then we can go forward on a strong platform to defend the overall benefits of immigration.
Thank you, Andy. Our final question. Our final question, this is the Fabian Society, and we've not talked about inequality yet. So let me ask Michael Offler, and this is going to be a final one-minute opportunity for each of our candidates to respond. Michael.
Michael Offler, City of Durham. Is socialism dead?
Andy Burnham.
Certainly not. I think it's needed now more than ever that we have a political party that with confidence makes the argument about a society where everybody gets on, because we are seeing rising inequality, rising insecurity, where some people in the bottom third of society are living life week to week, day to day, because they do not have basic security in their life. And that is our issue. That is something that we have to address. We will never have a more equal society as long as that remains the case. Everybody should have the right to a secure job. Everybody should have the ability to give their family a decent standard of living. That is our job, to put those things right. It's our job to speak to those aspirations that everybody and every family has. And that is only a Labour response can do that. Labour values can do that. So it's needed more than ever in a world in the 21st century when society is becoming more and more and more unequal. Ed was right, actually, to focus on that issue. But what we have to do this time round is have a more convincing answers to how we're going to change it and how we're going to help everybody get on.
Thank you, Yvette.
No, the fight against unjust inequality is more important than ever. We're seeing widening inequality, we're seeing greater divisions in our communities, and that's why we need a Labour Party. That's who we are, that's what we were built for, and that's why we've got to fight even more strongly for that now. So yeah, that's about those who are on the lowest pay and the lowest income, helping them get on. It's also about recognising that we should help as many people as possible to work, but also recognise that those that aren't able to work, we shouldn't shame them or call them work shy or scroungers. We should support everybody to help them get on for the future. And it's also about those quality jobs and opportunities so that everybody can aspire to something that is brilliant for the future that every single one of us can be part of. That's what the Labour Party is about.
Thank you very much. Mary.
Socialism isn't dead, but we face the challenge of change. We are a democratic socialist party. We believe that the rights we enjoy reflect the responsibilities we owe. We want to live together in a spirit of mutual tolerance, solidarity, and respect. And we reject inequality wherever we find it, whether it's inequality in our streets, in our towns and cities, inequality between regions, or inequality in the world. We must make sure that we reformulate ourselves along with our sister parties across Europe and along with those struggling parties that are trying to use socialist values, who are looking to us as a model for how they bring equality into their own countries to build a fairer world where we have a low carbon energy, we have a resource efficient world, and where we do not see inequality pulling at the global fabric and creating many of the big global problems that we see, whether that's migration, whether we're seeing climate change. We've got to make sure that as one world we can come together and where we all stay connected with each other.
Thank you. Liz.
No, it's not dead, but it's got to fundamentally change. And when we all leave this room afterwards and we feel good because we've been with each other, we have to be searingly honest. We have to be as passionate about wealth creation as we are wealth distribution, because we need to raise money to invest in the public services we all care about. We have to have fiscal credibility at the heart of all we do. So we know that we're going to face big problems with the cuts that the Tories are proposing. But if we spend 5 years just railing against them, people will think we believe the only answer is spend, spend, spend. And that gives me my third point, which is to change. Socialism has got to become far less centralised. We need a radical reform of the state that devolves power and control and puts power into people's hands. That is a big change for us. Look at what our local councils are doing. They are trying to answer the question, how do we deliver social justice when there's less money around? We need to learn to them if we've got from them if we've got a hope in hell of winning again in 2020.
Socialism is totally alive. It's totally alive all over the world. People that are up against it, people living in poverty, people facing global corporations destroying their land, their forests and taking their minerals, they see a socialist answer to those problems. We've got to be proud of the fact that we were founded as an amalgamation of labour interests and socialism. Tony Benn always said that the Labour Party is not a socialist party, but it contains many socialists, just like the Church of England contains many Christians. But but we have to also recognise that we sometimes confuse socialism with statism and how the state does things. Socialism is also about a way of life. It's also about how you correspond with people, how you relate to people, and how communities organise. And the interesting thing about the growth of socialism in the 17th to 20th century was very much about communities coming together to get collective resolution to their difficulties. The most popular institution in Britain is the only real example of socialism we've got, and that is the National Health Service, because it gives healthcare as a fact of right to everybody, not a point of privilege. And so I think we've got to be proud of our socialist roots, proud of our socialist ideas, and proud of the principle, from each according to their means to each according to their needs. Let's just be proud of it.
Delighted. Thank you. a note of unity and solidarity to end on. Thank you to all our panellists. Will you join with me again to applaud them all? And that takes us to the end of today's conference. We've been requested by the organisers if we could try to leave by that door as much as possible. The main stairs you came up with aren't available, so that door to them as much as you can. I want to thank the organisers of today, the volunteers and staff, particularly my colleagues Kira Dunn and Felicity Slater. If you're not a member of the Fabian Society, please join. And we'd love to see anyone who can stay on for a drink with us in the Cornwallis pub, which is 3 minutes walk away. Thank you and safe journeys.
Thank you.